This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio.
Cremel Hair Tonic and Cremel Shampoo present the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes, starring Nigel Bruce as Dr. Watson and Tom Conway as Sherlock Holmes. Well, once again, it's Monday evening and time for our weekly visit with the good Dr. Watson. Good evening, Dr. Watson.
Good evening, Mr. Bell.
From the hints you gave us last week about tonight's story, it sounded like quite a yarn. It took place in Paris, you said.
Yes, my boy. It was in that colorful city of bright lights, lilting music, and beautiful women that Sherlock Holmes and I had one of the oddest adventures that ever happened to us in our long association. I call the case The Adventure of the Scarlet Worm.
Sounds mighty intriguing, Dr. Watson. But first, men, if you want a successful, prosperous appearance, don't give your hair that cheap, greasy, plastered down look. I've heard many men complain lately that the hairdressing they use is too greasy or too highly perfumed. That's why I urge you to try Cremel Hair Tonic. This highly specialized hair tonic has just enough light oil to keep hair handsomely groomed all day long. Every hair in place. Cremel gives hair a rich, healthy-looking luster, too. Yet it never leaves hair looking or feeling greasy or sticky. This is because Cremel contains a special combination of hair grooming ingredients which is found in no other hair tonic. After you apply Cremel, just run your hand over your hair. Notice how delightfully clean your hair feels. Notice how no greasy film comes off on your hand or hat band. And how the ladies admire that natural, well-groomed look which Cremel always gives. Yes, Cremel gives your hair a handsome, clean-cut appearance, as if you had just combed it, and it keeps it that way all day long. K-R-E-M-L, Cremel Hair Tonic. Now, Dr. Watson, how about your new Sherlock Holmes story, The Adventure of the Scarlet Worm?
Well, Mr. Bell, though that singular affair took place in Paris, I suppose the story really began on an October evening in Baker Street, a long, long time ago. I'd been more than usually busy with my practice that day, and I returned to our lodging shortly after 9, I remember. As I entered the living room, Sherlock Holmes was seated at his side table, clad in his dressing gown and working hard over a chemical investigation. A large, curved retort was boiling furiously in the bluish flame of a Bunsen burner. Finally, he brought a test tube containing a solution over to the table. In his right hand, he held a slip of litmus paper.
You come at a crisis, Watson. If this litmus paper remains blue, all is well. If it turns red, it means a man's life.
Good Lord Holmes, really?
Aha. As I thought, it turns red. And now to send a telegram to Scotland Yard, and I need have no further connection with the case.
Well, you didn't tell me that you were working on a new case, Holmes?
It was a shoddy little affair, my dear Watson. An orthopedic shoemaker in Wapping became somewhat fretful with his wife. He added poison to her morning pot of tea and was stupid enough to leave a sample of the deadly brew. It was purely a routine matter. Let's forget it. You look tired, old chap.
Yes, I'm Holmes. Busy day.
I hope you won't be too tired to accompany me to Paris tomorrow.
To Paris? Why?
This afternoon I received a very rare visitor in these rooms, my brother Mycroft. All is not well at the Foreign Office. They need our help.
Well, what's wrong, Holmes?
An international spy ring is at work. In the past few months, important secrets have leaked out. Vital secrets that might bring this country to the verge of war.
Good gracious me.
Two of the Foreign Office's brightest young men have committed suicide rather than divulge how they betrayed their trust. Mycroft tells me he has reason to suspect a beautiful and dangerous young lady in Paris who inspired these men... a loyalty even above patriotism.
And they want you to try and trap her, is that it?
No, Watson. They want us.
Oh, us. Yes.
Mycroft and I agreed that you would be perfect bait to use in such a trap.
Bait? It sounds like a piece of cheese.
Only metaphorically, Watson. You must agree that your imposing appearance, your open countenance and hearty manner would attract the attention of any female spy.
Yes, I see what you mean. Perhaps you're right.
In any case, we shall make you doubly desirable by entrusting you with... certain invaluable naval secrets.
Masterly, Holmes, masterly. You will entrust me with utterly worthless documents, spread the story that they're valuable, and wait for the woman to approach me.
Precisely. I shall accompany you as a bodyguard, but leave you largely to your own devices. Yes, Watson, I have high hopes of this trip to Paris. With you as the worm and me as the hook, I think we may snare this evil loveliness.
Mr. Holmes, Dr. Watson, you have shown me your credentials and explained your mission. We are aware of this firing. We are on constant watch. But I think you would have done better to have stayed in your own country. We of the Paris police are perfectly capable of handling such an affair ourselves, I assure you.
Inspector Rigaud, the fact remains that two Foreign Office men died here under sinister circumstances.
Nasty business, you know. British officials.
Monsieur, I myself investigated the deaths. They were both self-inflicted. We of the Deuxième Bureau cannot fathom the mind of a suicide.
Quite. But I doubt if the deaths were coincidental. Surely there must be some connecting link between them, Inspector?
The only facts I can give you, monsieur, are these. Both men frequented an American-owned gambling casino in Montmartre.
The name of it, please?
Slater's on Rue Fontaine. The only other fact I can give you is that both the dead men were seen there in the company of a certain Mademoiselle Elvira.
Ah, that must be the woman that Mycroft spoke of.
Can you describe her, Inspector?
Oh, what a woman. Though she is very young, princes have dueled for her favors.
Really?
At the moment, a high official of the Banque de France lies in a prison cell because he appropriated funds that he lavished on her. She is a femme fatale, messieurs. But she is as elusive as the wind.
Well, Watson, our first move is obvious. Tonight we shall visit Slater's gambling casino on the Rue Fontaine and try our luck.
I say, Holmes, this is all rather exciting, isn't it? Paris at night. We're on our way to an American gambling casino in the hopes of meeting a beautiful young spy named Elvira. Just like a novel.
Quite. Incidentally, since the young lady apparently moves in high society, I think it would be wiser if we give you a more impressive name. A fictitious title, perhaps.
Well, how about the title I used once before? Sir William Norton.
Splendid. Sir William Norton it shall be. And I trust that Sir William remembers the role he is to play?
Yes, indeed, Holmes. If I do meet the young lady, I'm to appear very susceptible to her beauty.
Not too hard for you, I imagine.
And I'm to drop dark hints about the valuable secret that I'm carrying.
Precisely, Watson. And if the lady proves as intrigued as I hope she will, you will follow the matter through to its logical conclusion.
Well, logical conclusion, Holmes? Yes, I don't quite know how to take that.
Ah, here's the casino. Courage, Watson, and good luck.
Good evening, I'm Sam Slater. You gentlemen haven't been here before.
No, Mr. Slater. My name is Sherlock Holmes, and this is Sir William Norton.
How do you do, Sam?
Holmes? Sherlock Holmes, the detective? Not here drumming up business, I hope.
Oh, no. Just showing Sir William some of the sights of Paris.
Fine. Then relax and enjoy yourself, gentlemen. Forget your profession, Mr. Holmes. In Paris at night, there's no crime. Or if there is, the police are conveniently blind to it. Glad to have you.
Oh, nice place, Holmes. I think perhaps I'll take a little flutter at the tables.
Pardon, monsieur.
You wish to speak to me, sir?
Yes. I could not help but overhear Slater mention your name. It is a great honor to meet Sherlock Holmes. Permit me to introduce myself. I am André Flandon.
How do you do? And this is Sir William Norton.
I flatter myself that perhaps you have heard of me. My poetry has been published in England.
Oh, poet, oh Lord.
No, Monsieur Flandon, I'm afraid it's escaped me.
You have not heard my verses? Etant, étincelant, où s'arrangea mon cœur? Charming, do you not think?
Quite. Though the metaphor seems a little involved, if you don't mind my saying so. What do you think, Sir William?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, there's only one language. That's English.
Bon. Then I shall recite a poem of mine in English translation.
Oh, must you? I say, Holmes, look at that stunning creature sitting by herself at the chemin de fer table. She's smiling at me.
Oh, you are fortunate, Sir William. That is Mademoiselle Elvira.
Elvira? Oh, never heard of her.
And now, gentlemen, in translation, my poem begins, a grave as the grave, August as August heat.
Yes, I think I'll try my luck at the tables over there. I'll see you later, Holmes.
Much later, I hope, Sir William.
Sir William Norton, is it not?
Yes, it is, though I can't think how you recognize me, Miss, Madam,
You may call me Elvira.
Oh, friendly of you. Elvira? How do you know me?
Sam Slater told me who you were. He knows that I have a certain penchant for distinguished Englishmen.
That's extremely flattering. Perhaps you care to join me in a glass of champagne?
Oh, yes, I would like that. Let's sit at this table.
Monsieur, garçon, garçon.
Oui, monsieur.
Deux champagne, bon champagne, too.
Oui.
You are here in Paris on business?
Yes, I am. Important business. You see, I'm handling an extremely delicate and confidential matter for the British government.
Well, how very impressive. And I suppose you will be too busy to let me show you some of the sights of Paris.
Oh, no, I don't think so. All work, no play, you know. I'd be very flattered to escort you, madame.
Oh, good. Then if we are to be friends, I can't go on calling you Sir William. I think I shall call you Willie. Do you mind?
Willie, no, like you. Willie. Good night. Oh, yes, thank you. Mercy. Open up, will you?
Oui, monsieur.
Well, we must drink a toast now, will
we? May I propose one to Willie, the man of mystery?
Oh, thank you, my dear, and I shall drink to Elvira. And to our better acquaintance.
Mm-hmm. Good night, Willie. I shall see you tomorrow.
Yes, rather. How about breakfast?
Oh, it's nearly breakfast time now.
Oh, really?
How about lunch?
Yes, of course, my dear.
But your important mission for the British government. When will you attend to that?
Well, in a day or two, Elvira. Good night, my dear.
Come here, Willie. Closer. Good night.
What? You kiss me, you little darling. Thanks awfully.
You're doing splendidly, Watson. Splendidly. Keep it up.
Oh, she's a sweet little thing, Holmes. It's hard to believe that she's a spy. I told her that I was here on a secret and confidential mission. I even told her that I was carrying important naval plans. She didn't seem particularly interested.
Of course not. She's much too clever to use the clumsy approach. She'll work slowly. She'll wait until she thinks she's got you completely captivated before she goes after that secret.
Oh, then I'm just to carry on the way I did last night.
Yes, old chap.
Oh, good.
Wine her, dine her, send her flowers, buy her jewelry. Make her think you're head over heels in love with her. I suspect that you won't find the job too unpleasant.
Oh, I'm sure I shall. For 3 days now, Elvira, you've been showing me Paris, but this is the first time I've actually been in your flat.
You like it, really?
Yes, very much.
I thought it would be much quieter here. At dinner, you said you were going to explain some of your important business to me. You were going to show me what a secret treaty looks like.
Yes, I know I said that, but Elvira, a pretty girl like you wouldn't be interested in such matters.
Oh, but I would. You have the treaty with you?
Yes, I have.
Then please let me see it. Oh, please, Willie.
Oh, I can't go through with this masquerade any longer.
Masquerade? What do you mean?
Well, I've grown really fond of you in these last few days, Elvira. I can't let you walk into a trap.
Trap? What are you talking about, Willie?
I'm not Willie. I'm not Sir William Norton. My name's Watson. Dr. John H. Watson. My closest friend is the detective Sherlock Holmes. We came to Paris to try and trap you.
Trap me?
Oh, my dear girl, you're suspected of being mixed up in a spy ring.
What?
Well, that's why I pose as an important embassy from England.
Trap? Are you doddering old fool?
Oh, no, don't say that.
I'll teach you about traps.
Elvira, put down that revolver.
No, I'm going to.
You're going to drop it, my dear.
I can't do it. I'm just a stupid, weak female after all. I've grown fond of you, too. The bumbling old walrus.
Oh, there, Elvira.
You remind me of my father. He was such a sentimental old fool. Like you. Just as sweet.
Elvira, you're young. I know you don't really want to stay mixed up with a bunch of criminals.
No.
Now, look here. You tell Sherlock Holmes and me what you know about this spy ring, and we'll see that no harm comes to you, my dear.
I've wanted to get out of it for months. It was rather glamorous and exciting at first, and they paid me well. But I hate them now. And yet when I told them I wanted to get away, they threatened me.
Oh, we'll take care of you. Just tell us who's at the head of the organization.
That I don't know. But I can tell you a lot about some of the members.
That's splendid. Then slip on your coat and a funny little bonnet, and we'll go over and talk to Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, and have him see me looking like this. Oh, bleary eyes and red. Oh, no. You go and bring him here. By the time you get back, I'll be more presentable.
All right, I'll go and get him at once.
Watson, I'm occasionally astonished at the many facets to your character.
Oh, thank you very much, Holmes. It's nice of you to say so.
Your personal charm has apparently convinced a dangerous woman that crime does not pay. It's remarkable, if it's true.
What do you mean, if it's true?
Surely it must have occurred, even to a man burning with the zeal of one who has snatched a convert from the fiery flames, that this could be a trap for us to walk into. The delay, while the young lady makes herself presentable, would provide an excellent opportunity for her to summon her associates.
Oh, upon my soul, Holmes, you're utterly cynical. I don't believe you have a heart.
Possibly not, but I do have a head.
Well, here's her place now. Stop, cabby, stop.
Arrête.
Oh, I'll bet you £100 to a shilling that she's still waiting for us and alone.
Long odds, Watson. Very long odds.
Look, look, look. The concierge is sweeping up the steps. He'll be able to tell us if anyone's been here since I left.
True. Bonsoir.
Bonsoir, monsieur.
Vous parlez anglais?
Yes, monsieur.
Splendid fellow. Parlez anglais. Look here, we were calling on Mademoiselle Elvira. Has anyone been to see her in the last half an hour?
Oui, monsieur. A man. She left with him only 5 minutes ago. Though I do not think she wished to go.
You mean that she was taken away by force?
Not exactly, monsieur. But I could swear on the Sacré-Cœur that the man who accompanied her was holding a pistol to her back.
You don't mean it.
I think she has been, kidnapped.
In just a moment, we'll rejoin Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson. Every man who takes pride in his appearance should know that handsome, healthy-looking hair needs a hygienic scalp. That's why when you buy a hair tonic, be sure to get your money's worth. Don't settle for just any hairdressing when you can enjoy the extra advantages of Cremel Hair Tonic. This highly specialized hair tonic contains an amazing combination of hair grooming ingredients, which is found in no other hair tonic. Cremel keeps dry, stubborn hair neatly in place all day, and always gives hair such a natural, well-groomed appearance, never sticky or greasy. But men, Cremel does lots more than keep hair looking handsome. Cremel leaves your scalp feeling alive and tingling. At the same time, it removes itchy, loose dandruff. It's simply great to lubricate a dry scalp. And if your hair is so dry it breaks and falls when you comb it, Cremel actually helps condition the hair, in that it makes it feel softer, more pliable. So men, buy a bottle of Cremel at any drug counter. Ask for an application at your barber shop. Let Cremel help keep your scalp hygienic. Your hair always looking handsome, always looking its very best. K-R-E-M-L. Cremel Hair Tonic. Well, Dr. Watson, once again you left me on the edge of my chair. So when you went back to the girl's flat, she'd been kidnapped, hmm? What did you do next?
Well, fortunately the concierge was able to give us a good description of the cab driver, and with the aid of Inspector Rigo, we were able to find the man and question him. He'd driven the couple, he told us, to a Valapash den in the alleys of Montmartre, a club known as the Scarlet Worm. Holmes and I, accompanied by the French inspector, lost no time in taking a cab to the place.
Monsieur, I should not permit you to visit Le Ver Écarlate, the Scarlet Worm, as you would say, without my protection. It is a cesspool of the underworld. Men have been known to enter there and make their exit by back door, head first into the sewers.
Good Lord, they've taken that poor little girl there.
Inspector Rigaud, as I said, Mademoiselle Elvira told my friend that she does not know who is at the head of this organization. Have you any suspicions?
Yes, but little else, my friend. One thing we are sure of, this man of mystery, the brain behind these criminals, is not French. Probably he is English.
An Englishman, or so, surely not.
Ah, Le Ver Écarlate is waiting for us. Be on the alert, my friends, and keep close to me.
I told you we didn't want to do it. You'll have to come around.
Hello, there's Sam Slater, the man who The one's the casino we went to the other night.
Yes, and he seems to be involved in a violent argument.
Yeah, a rat hole like this, you don't know what you're doing, Shepard.
Latam, you are you in here? Stay in your own golden feast time.
Who is the man that Slater's arguing with, Inspector?
That is Chabert, the owner of this establishment.
Oh, Slater's leaving. I wonder what he was doing in a place like this.
Come, we'll speak to Chabert and find out. Et bonsoir, Chabert.
Bonsoir. I am honored with a visit from the inspector, the detective. Que voulez-vous?
Since when does a visitor from the Deuxième Bureau have to explain his business, Chabert? Tell me, why was Slater here? And why did you argue?
Bah, Cruchon. He comes here to try and hire some of my attache. He has trouble collecting his gambling debts. I spit on him and his high-class victims. But they can't stick to themselves. And not bother to be
pleasant fellow.
Let's sit at the table, shall we? You might as well be as unobtrusive as possible.
I shall rejoin you in a moment, monsieur. I wish to make some investigation.
Watson, you seem to be a positive magnet towards the fair sex. Look at this young lady heading for you.
Red hair, a beret, and a painted face. Not my type, I'm afraid.
Bonsoir, monsieur. Voulez-vous m'offrir un apéritif?
Run along, young lady, and don't sit there.
Oh, no, no, Watson. Where's your chivalry? Please sit down, won't you?
Merci, monsieur. Pretend you don't recognize me.
Of course I don't. Never saw you before in my life.
Whereas I've been keeping silence, Mademoiselle Elvira.
Elvira?
The wig is excellent and the use of makeup superb, Mademoiselle. But I recognized you at once by the confirmation of your earlobes.
Elvira, why are you disguised? Why'd they bring you here?
Shh. I cannot speak now. You must get me away at once. Be careful. I'm being watched. We can't leave by the front way. But I know a back staircase that leads from the cellar. But there may be trouble.
You take her, Watson. I'll guard the retreat. When the music starts again, dance with her. When you get to the back of the hall, slip out. I'll join you at the hotel.
Oh, Lord. Look, 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 Holmes. Look who's coming to our table. It's that ghastly poet fellow we met at the casino.
André Flandon. Pay no attention. I'll take care of him.
Ah, once again, I meet my friend Sherlock Holmes. I have a new poem that I've composed in your especial honor.
Dance, Watson, and good luck.
All right, you are, Holmes. Come along, my dear. Come along.
Your friends leave. Au revoir. Now, I shall tell you my poem. It begins...
Well, Vera, my dear, I can't tell you how relieved I am to find you all right.
Shh. Don't look so serious. Pretend that I'm some girl that you don't know. Laugh.
That's all right.
That's better. Now, dance me toward that door in the corner. There we are. Now, let's slip through it.
Don't see a thing.
Follow me. There are stone stairs here. Careful.
Where do these lead?
To an alley. Oh, careful. The stairs turn here.
Look out, there's a light coming up the steps towards us.
Shove it!
You did not think you could live so easily, did you, Elvira? I've been waiting for you.
Look out, he's got a knife!
And he can't see without his lantern.
Where's the path?
Run, Elvira. I'll follow you. Run, run, run.
You won't follow her.
Oh, won't I? How'd you like that, you filthy swine?
Watson, are you all right?
Yes, Holmes, I'm quite all right.
Then run, old chap. I'll take care of this end. See that the girl is safe.
Well, now that we're all safely back at the hotel, I can tell you, Holmes, that I hated leaving you in that filthy den.
Inspector Rigaud had a revolver. It's more efficient than a knife, eh, Inspector?
It was a near thing, Monsieur Holmes. You fought bravely, and so did your recumbent friend on the sofa there.
André Flandon, the poet. I wondered why you brought him back here.
For a poet, he uses his fists with surprising skill.
He must be hurt. He seems to be unconscious.
I think he's suffering from the effects of a trifle too much absinthe. I hadn't the heart to leave him. Ah, there you are, Mademoiselle Elvira. You're feeling no ill effects, I hope?
No, Mr. Holmes.
Splendid. Then, now that we're all assembled, supposing you tell us your story. Who kidnapped you tonight?
It was one of Chavez's men. They made me disguise myself and swear never to see either of you again, on pain of death.
Instead of which, we came to see you.
We knew that Chavez was connected with the spies. Now he is safely under lock and key.
But we still don't know who is at the head of this organization. Can you give us any clues, Mademoiselle?
I think that the man you want was waiting in the cab that took me to the Scarlet Worm. But he was masked and he never spoke.
Can't you recall anything that might give us a clue?
Oh, one incident, if it means anything. Chavez's man said to him, "We go to the Scarlet Worm, eh? That is good. You also, you make worms, no?" And then he laughed.
He said this in French, of course?
Yes, yes, he did.
Then the case is solved. I'm an idiot. I should have spotted it sooner. The man you want, Inspector, is lying asleep on the... Look out! He's not asleep. Watson, he's got a revolver.
Oh, no, you don't. Oh! He's gone to sleep again.
Really, Watson, you're in splendid form tonight.
But, Monsieur Holmes, why do you say that man is the culprit?
You yourself gave me the clue, Inspector, when you told me that the criminal was an Englishman posing as a Frenchman.
But you only met the fellow on two occasions, and then not for more than a few minutes.
It was long enough to realize that Flandin was really an Englishman. The first time we met him, he quoted a poem that he said was translated from the French. The translation was, "Grave as the grave, August as August heat." The poem could not have been translated from the French because both of those puns are possible only in the English language.
But how did my repeating the conversation in the cab give you a clue, Mr. Holmes?
Because it was another pun. In French, the word for worms and for verses is the same. Vers, spelt V-R-S.
I see it now. When the man in the cab said, "You make worms," he also meant, "You make verses."
Precisely, Watson. And thereby pointed directly at the poet there. With André Flandin, or whatever his real name is, in prison, I'm sure Mycroft will have no more trouble with his spy ring.
Ladies, of course you use a shampoo to wash your hair, but just a word of caution. There are many popular shampoos today which leave the hair lustrous but have a tendency to dry the hair. And that's why I advise you to always use Kremel shampoo.
How right you are, Joe. Lovely Powers models were among the very first to discover the amazing beautifying qualities of Kremel shampoo. They claim no other shampoo leaves hair with more brilliant, glossy, natural highlights. Yet under no circumstances does Kremel shampoo ever dry your hair.
Kremel shampoo is not a soapless shampoo. It's not a cream shampoo. It's not a drying detergent. It's entirely different.
Yes, after a Kremel shampoo, your hair actually radiates natural, brilliant luster. But Kremel shampoo is one shampoo you can buy today that has a beneficial built-in oil base, which helps keep the hair from becoming dry or brittle.
So, ladies, be smart. Always wash your hair with Kremel shampoo. It leaves hair a vision of shining beauty, yet in no way hurts the texture. K-R-E-M-L, Kremel shampoo. Now, Dr. Watson, what about next week?
Well, now, let me think. Next week, what should I tell you? Next week, I think I'll tell you the story of how Sherlock Holmes, by solving an ancient musical cipher, managed to save the estates and restore the fortunes of the Earl of Moultrie. I call it The Adventure of Moultrie Abbey.
Tonight's newest Sherlock Holmes adventure was suggested by an incident in Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's story, The Naval Treaty. Nigel Bruce appeared by permission of California Pictures. Tom Conway through the courtesy of Eagle Lion Pictures. Sherlock Holmes series is produced by Tom McKnight with original music composed and conducted by Alex Steinert. This is Joseph Bell speaking for Kremel Hair Tonic and Kremel Shampoo, inviting you to be with us next week at this same time when Dr. Watson will tell us about The Adventure of Moultrie Abbey. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
Now from Hollywood, it's time for Edmund O'Brien as...
Johnny Dollar.
Mickey McQueen, Johnny. How are you?
Oh, Mickey, I tried to phone you a couple of times. I never reached you.
I'm out a lot these days, Johnny.
Hey, I heard about your protection of Sergeant, Mickey. Nice going.
Well, it isn't good. They're taking my beat away from me, putting me behind a desk. I've got to talk to a friend about it. Will you be home tonight?
You really sound worried, Mickey. What is it?
Oh, nothing yet, Johnny, but there'll be murder before it's finished. My mind's made up. I want to talk to you about it.
Well, sure, Mickey. I'll be here any time you want to come up.
Edmund O'Brien in another adventure of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to whom it may concern, Hartford Police Headquarters, Hartford, Connecticut. I don't expect you to honor this statement, but since the reports to my regular employers go in on these forms, the following is an accounting of my expenditures during my personal investigation of the Nicky McQueen matter. It's been my privilege to have worked a number of cases with Nicky McQueen here in Hartford, and through the years, a friendship developed between us. So when he phoned Tuesday night to say he wanted to talk to me, I was glad to ask him over. But when it got to be 1:30 in the morning and he still hadn't arrived, I wasn't so glad. He arrived at 2.
I'm sorry I'm late, Johnny.
Yeah. What held you up? I was about to drop off.
I had to take, Johnny.
You're in uniform, Mickey. What about your date?
My beat? My beat won't miss me. After 20 years of walking it from dark to dawn, checking its doors and passing the time of night with its people, talking sober.
Yeah. Oh, is it too late for a drink, Mick? I got your brand, some Irish.
Yes, that was good of you. I've been a good policeman, Johnny. I can say that without sounding like I'm stuck on myself, can't I now?
Well, I've never heard anybody say anything else, Mickey.
I've got more friends to my credit than I have arrests, I'd say that. But I've got a quiet beat.
Well, I think there are quieter beats in town. Maybe you're lucky. Here's to it.
All right. But be careful what it is. There's murder being done and planned right this minute, Johnny. Them that can stop it don't have the heart, right or wrong.
What are you talking about, Mickey?
I know what I'm talking about.
Are you feeling all right?
Feeling all right? I'm as healthy as I was yesterday, ain't I now?
I didn't see you yesterday.
If they're taking my job, putting me behind a desk, a degrading end for a man that's been active for 20 years.
After 20 years on your feet, you should take a rest. You've earned one.
The very words of commission, Johnny. But, Johnny, I...
Yeah, Mickey?
Never mind. The devil take them all. I've used up enough of your time.
Wait a minute. You came over to talk about something more than your new job. What's this stuff about murder being planned and being done?
I shouldn't have said it. I wish you'd forget it.
What's the matter with you? You know me well enough to tell me, and you know me well enough to know I'll keep any confidence you want me to keep.
You're a good friend, Johnny. Maybe that's why I changed my mind about telling you.
And why'd you come over?
Because I thought I was going to talk to you. But I'm not.
All right, it's your business. But you're acting like a kid, Mickey. Now, if you don't have anything to say to me, it's after 2. I may have a job in the morning.
All right, Johnny. I'm sorry I bothered you. I'll say goodnight.
I didn't sleep very well for the rest of the night. The sort of a half-dozed parts of Mickey's conversation kept coming back to me. And the more sleep I lost over it, the more I wished I'd been less grumpy and more sympathetic. There wasn't a job for me the next day, and right afternoon I decided to drop by his apartment and find out his mood when he was off duty. Mickey's apartment occupied the ground floor of a house not far from mine. I could hear a woman crying somewhere inside. I smelled domestic trouble, but I pushed the buzzer anyway.
Are you the...
Yeah, I'm Johnny Dollar, friend of Mr. McQueen's.
Oh, yes. Johnny Dollar. He said to phone you if I ever needed...
Is he home?
In there.
She pointed in the direction of a door smaller than the outside door. The door to either a bathroom or a closet. It's a closet. The clothes were bunched at one end of the rod, and from the other, still in uniform, his own polished leather belt drawn tightly around his neck, hung Mickey McQueen. I I walked back into the lace-curtained living room. The girl who had let me in didn't go with the furnishings. She was young, attractive, and her shoulder-length white blonde hair might have been natural. She had stopped crying, and she acted as if she were waiting for me to start something.
Well, what about it? You explain yourself, or do I get three guesses? Never mind that look. I only live here.
Ah. Well, I didn't know Mickey had a daughter.
Thanks for the compliment, but I'm his wife.
I didn't know he had a wife, either.
Maybe he was ashamed of me. My name's Thelma.
I'm sorry, Thelma.
You an old friend of Mickey's?
Yeah, but he never told me about you.
Have you seen him lately?
Last night. First he phoned me, then he came by to talk to me.
What did he say?
I'm not sure. He was pretty handy with double talk. Maybe I was supposed to understand it, but I didn't.
What was it about?
About his job, the change he was making, and something about murders being planned and done, and nobody doing anything to stop them.
Then he didn't tell you.
What?
That I was leaving him.
He's never mentioned it. Why were you leaving him?
Because it was all wrong. I never should have married him in the first place.
Why did you?
Because he was the kindest, most wonderful man who ever lived. Does that answer your question?
Not quite. Is there more?
Did you know his first wife?
Yeah.
Then I guess you know he took her death pretty hard. They'd been married 10 years. I met him after she died. He was lonely, and I was... He was pretty wonderful to me. I thought I could help him. It wasn't because of him I was leaving. It was me. But I never thought he'd do this.
I don't think he did.
What do you mean?
I think he was murdered.
But why?
When did you find him?
I came home about a half an hour before you got here.
Did you phone the police?
No, not yet. I didn't know what to do.
Well, where had you been?
I told you I was leaving him. I've been living in a hotel. Does it matter?
Why'd you come back?
To get some things I'd left. Why are you asking me these things?
When it's murder, there's bound to be a lot of questions.
I don't think it was. Everybody loved him. He didn't have an enemy in the world. Why would anybody want to kill a man like Mickey McQueen?
I didn't have an answer to that, but I started there in the house to try to find one. If it was murder by hanging, I knew it couldn't have been committed without a fight. But a half-hour search didn't uncover any traces of a struggle. I phoned in a report and left Thelma and the apartment. For the rest of the day, I tried to talk myself into leaving the matter in the hands of the police where it belonged. But I couldn't do it. That night, I started making the rounds of Mickey's beat. I talked to a corner magazine vendor who had sold him a dime mystery, a woman in a cigar store who had talked with him, and a cabbie who had borrowed $5 from him. None of them gave me anything helpful. My next stop was the Cedric Hotel, where I looked up the house detective, Ned Martin.
Oh, Dollar, what are you doing in this end of town? Looking for work?
How are you, Martin? Oh, I got a night off. I'm taking a postman's holiday. Did you hear about Mickey?
His promotion? Yeah, he deserved it.
I didn't mean that. He's dead.
No. What happened?
He was found hanging in his own clothes closet.
The devil. Come on in the office where we can talk. Sit down. Oh, Mickey, I'll miss him.
So will I. Did you see him last night?
Yeah, he dropped in. He always did once or twice a night. Just to shoot the breeze, you know. Why'd he do it? Did he leave a note or anything?
I think he was murdered.
What makes you say that?
He came over to see me about 2:30 this morning. There was something on his mind. He wanted to talk, but he wouldn't.
That figures.
What do you mean?
I noticed something about him last night. He was real low. I asked him what was the matter. He said it was because it was his last night on his beat. He was supposed to check into his new job today, but that didn't sound right to me.
Did you know he had a wife?
Yeah, I heard about it, and then I hounded him till he showed me her picture.
Platinum blonde?
Yeah, looked like it. And young. I didn't want to embarrass him by asking, but I wondered about her. What makes you think it was murder, Dollar?
Well, do you think Mickey was the type to kill himself?
No, but how can you tell?
I guess you can't. All you can do is try to find out. Well, if you don't have anything more, I'll be on my way.
Wait a minute. I guess it was a dirty trick, and I wish I hadn't done it, but I snooped that marriage. I found out who she was. Her name was Thelma Weaver. She did a couple of years in Joliet.
Where'd you get that?
Well, things like that don't stay hidden. I'd drop it if I were you. I really would.
What are you holding out on me?
It's for your own good, Johnny.
I'll shake it out of you if I have to.
Okay, hero. You know Fred Coo, the Calcutta Club over on Bartlett?
I know of him. He's a police informer, isn't he?
Part-time. If you won't take my advice and forget it, go talk to him. And don't tell him who sent you.
Fred Coo, as the department knows, is half-Oriental. The day coroner's joined to Calcutta is Indian because he can get the effect with no more expensive decoration than reed matting and coconut husks. The place was small and was jammed when I got there by a crowd that was largely male. I didn't recognize a face, but from the atmosphere, I got the feeling I could have retired on 10% of the bail bonds they bought in their time. I found Fred Coo leaning against a potted palm.
What do you want?
I want to talk to you about Mickey McQueen. You have an office?
You a cop, too?
Only a private one. I was a friend of Mickey's.
Oh, sure. Roy.
Yes?
I'm in my office for a little while. If there's any trouble, you buzz me.
What is that?
Come on, this way.
You got quite a crowd tonight, friend.
Oh, sure. Sometimes I get a lot of out-of-town trade.
Did you see Mickey last night?
No, I didn't. I get along fine with Mickey. He won't take any payoff, but he doesn't push me around. How is he?
You know his wife?
His wife? I didn't even know he was married.
Her name was Thelma Weaver before Mickey married her. She did some time in Joliet.
Oh? So why do you bother me with this? I got work to do.
You knew Mickey was dead?
No, I did not know that.
I don't see how it would be enough, but it struck me that if somebody knew he was married to an ex-con, they might try to use the information.
I suppose you're right. Yeah?
Roy, Fred, I think you'd better come out.
Important?
Yes, I think so.
Be right out. Pardon me, Dollar. A little trouble outside. You wait here. I'll come right back.
I waited. And while I did, I took a quick look around the office for another way out in case I might need it. There wasn't any unless the steel door in one of the walls was it. But before I could try it, the other door opened. I wasn't expecting Fred Coo to return so quickly, and neither was I expecting who did come in.
I didn't expect to find you here, Mr. Dollar.
Likewise, Mrs. McQueen.
I was looking for Mr. Coo.
What for?
I thought I might help. Mickey kept this notebook, you see, where he wrote down all the places he stopped when he made his rounds. This place was one of them. I thought if I could talk to this Mr. Coo.
Do you know Fred Coo?
No.
Do you know anybody named Weaver? Thelma Weaver?
All right, mister, that's enough. Reach.
Don't be crazy. What good would that do?
Stay where you are and don't try anything. I really mean it.
She looked like she really meant it. It was a small revolver, Colt 25. I didn't know whether she'd come in meaning to use it on Fred Coo or me, but it didn't make much difference. At the moment, she had it pointed at my midsection.
And now back to our star, Edmund O'Brien, in the second act of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar.
I couldn't figure. She held her little revolver as if she was used to the feel of it, but there had been something actressy about the way she said reach. I couldn't figure her, but I decided not to take a chance. I grabbed up the inkwell from the desk and threw not it, but the contents at her.
Hey, what's the...
Okay. Drop it.
No.
Drop it.
Oh.
Drop it. Now sit down.
All right, what do you want?
Depends on what you want.
I told you. I want to find out who killed Mickey.
At the apartment earlier today, you didn't think anybody had. What about it?
All right, John. How much do you know?
That your name was Thelma Weaver, that you spent 2 years in Joliet.
That's right. After 2 years in that place, I didn't want to go back to that life and start all over again. I gave the bunch in Chicago to slip and came here. That's how I met Mickey. He arrested me. Vagrancy. What a laugh. Showed up in court the next morning and got me released in his custody. I really felt for the first time like I could start life over again. I know it sounds corny.
But good. You make it sound real good.
Now, believe me, do you?
Sure. I believe you as far as you've gone. I even believe the part about starting a new life. You saw that Mickey had a heart as big as the city, and you didn't lose any time moving into it. That was smart. It was about the safest hiding place you could have found. For you, but not for Mickey.
How did I know about Fred Koo or the kind of man he is? Somebody spotted me and told me. I didn't waste any time getting in touch with Chicago.
Those men out there, are they all from Chicago?
Most of them. Did you spot the tall one? Talks with an English accent.
Yeah, I remember. Roy.
That's him. He came first. He checked the possibilities on Mickey's beat. He found out about Mickey's being moved over to a new job.
Where was he being moved?
Some desk job.
Where?
At the police arsenal.
The arsenal? How'd he find that out?
I told him. I had to. He made me tell him.
What are Roy's plans, do you know?
Yes. Marquardt building. The one that has all the wholesale jewelers.
Oh, that's no good. Mickey was supposed to help him with a job of that size, or they'd reveal that he was married to an ex-con. That's not enough. They must have more than that.
I might as well tell you. Can't hurt me now any more than I've been hurt. His name's Roy Weaver. I'm married to him. He threatened to bring bigamy charges unless Mickey helped them.
That'd do it. With your record, bigamy would be a long stretch.
5 years. Mickey would do almost anything rather than cause me that.
Who killed him?
Roy did. I wasn't there, I swear I wasn't. But they met him after he got through work at 5:30 this morning.
Why did they kill him?
Mickey was all ready for his new job. He had the keys to the arsenal.
Here's your gun. If you're on the level, you may need this, and the caliber's too small to do me any good.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to the police.
Why not use the phone?
They'll be capped. And that bunch would be in here before I got started.
I wouldn't try it if I were you.
Where are you going, Donna?
I'm going home. I was waiting for Fred Koo, but I guess he decided not to bother.
Fred had to leave. Did Mrs. Weaver entertain you with her sordid story?
Yeah, it was very pleasant.
She's a charming girl. And you were going home to think about it.
Yeah, if you don't mind. Get out of my way.
Oh, I'm afraid I do mind. I couldn't chance having Fred interrupt to the arsenal, could I? Carl?
Yeah?
Get out of my way.
Hey, where'd you go? Come on, get out of here.
That's fine, Carl. Now, shall we go back to the office and wait? Bring him along, Carl. It's a pity you became involved in this, Dollar. I'd hope there wouldn't have to be any more violence.
You did stop him.
Yes. Thanks for the buzz, darling.
It was a pleasure. Look what the skunk did to my dress. Did Fred get started all right?
He's well on his way. She'll be back within the hour.
Hey, Mr. Weaver, what do we do with this guy?
Keep him out of the way. Put him in there. See that he stays quiet.
Sure. Hey, you. Turn around.
At least I found out what was behind the steel door I'd noticed earlier in the evening. When my eyes opened and I got accustomed to the light from a single dust-covered bulb, I realized that I was in a sort of wine cellar. There were some bottles, but most of the storage space was taken up by a large and varied assortment of burglar tools. And there were a few weapons, too, but I knew that they were nothing compared to what Fred would bring back if the raid on the arsenal was successful. I glanced at my watch at 11:15, and right after that, I heard the heavy latch on the door being turned. I got back into my position on the floor, close my eyes, and listen.
Don't forget the bars, Carl. We'll need them for the inside doors.
Yeah, I got you. Hey, Benson, you take these and I'll bring the rest. Hey, you want the guns in there, Mr. Weaver?
We won't need them. We won't need them, then. You, Crocker?
Yeah.
Listen closely now. We're behind schedule. Both cars are in back. In the Buick, you'll find the things in the arsenal.
Yeah.
I want you to move half of them over into the Cadillac. What about the grenades, Fred?
They're in a case marked CM-DM.
irritant gas, M6.
You heard that?
I got it.
Open the case and put half in the Buick. Most important is the cordite powder for the vaults. There are two boxes. Put one in the trunk of each car.
Right.
And be careful, it's touchy stuff.
I know, I've handled it before.
All right, get along then. But hurry.
It won't take long.
Now, Fred, you'll be in charge of one car. I'll be in the other.
That's all right.
We're agreed that we'll meet at the north entrance at 12:15. Both to approach the building from the east on Lincoln.
Ah, that's the best.
We'll have dropped two men to guard the south entrance. Two of my men will subdue the guard at the north.
They better. They'll spring the alarm in big hurry.
You can trust me. They'll use pumps. Selma?
Yes, sir?
Where are you going?
Don't be so snoopy. I'm going to powder my nose.
You'll come in with us.
Sure, or if you want me to.
I don't need you, but I don't think I should feel safe without you with me. Don't be long.
I'll be right back.
I think everything's ready for men here, Mr. Weaver.
Good. Go to the cars then, Carl.
What about the Seamus here?
Oh. We'll lock him up again. We'll decide what to do when we come back.
Well, I guess he can't cause no harm in there.
I tried to force the door using one of the bars they'd left behind, but no luck. Then I started poking the cement walls. I knew better than to expect to find any other exit. But with the biggest burglary in the history of Hartford underway, I had to do something. I kept a check on the time, and it was 20 minutes before they were due to arrive at the Marquardt building when a sound stopped me. The steel door was being opened. I moved behind it, still holding the bar.
Martin, are you in there?
Yeah, Martin, I'm here. Now, how'd you know I was here?
Some dame from the hotel, she told me you were here. What happened?
Why should she call you?
Well, how should I know? I don't even know who it was. She just said she knew you came to the hotel and that you were locked up in here. I mentioned the Calcutta to you. I came over to see what it was all about. Some matter, don't you believe me?
I don't know what to believe. You said you were holding something out of me when I talked to you.
I was. I knew Fred Kruger was selling information about Mickey's wife to some guns from Chicago. I knew it could have led to trouble.
Well, why didn't you tell me? You said it was for my own good.
I thought it was mine, too. I didn't want you to know so much you'd have to tell where you learned it. To prove how smart you were. I don't like this kind of stuff.
You got a car?
Yes, but it's big like work parking. Didn't tell me what's going on.
The Chicago bunch raided the police arsenal. They're armed with everything from cordite to Tommy guns. They're going into the Marquardt building in less than 20 minutes.
What's that?
Wholesale jewelers. Will you take me out there?
Take your partway if you're crazy enough to want to go.
That's good enough. Let's get back into the office. It's dead.
Who'd you want, the police?
Yeah.
We could stop on the way.
It'll take us 15 minutes to get to the Marquardt building. If we run into a patrol car on the way, we'll stop it. If we don't, you can drop me and then phone in. Where's your car? At the speed we traveled, we should have at least picked up a traffic cop, but we didn't. Martin wouldn't take me any further than the corner of Atlantic and Milton. And we reached there at 12 minutes after 12. That gave me 2 minutes to get to the Marquardt building. I didn't make it before they arrived, but it didn't make any difference. Both cars had pulled up and were unloading men. From a doorway about 50 yards down, I spotted Fred Kuh and Roy Weaver. Then I saw Thelma. She got out of the Buick and started toward me.
Thelma, where you going?
Weaver shouted at her, but she didn't answer. Instead, she stopped, and I saw the little gun glitter in her hand as she turned back to them. Then I saw what she was aiming at. The trunk of the Buick, where the cordite powder was.
Thelma, stop it!
The car went up in a blast of powder and gasoline, and she moved back towards the other. Someone who had survived the first explosion opened fire on her. I saw her fall, but after she was down, she raised herself, and her last shot connected with the cordite in the second car. By the time I got to her, both cars were flaming wrecks. I picked her up and ran.
Oh.
You're all right now, Thelma.
Who is it? Johnny?
Yeah.
Where are we?
We're still near the Marquardt building. We're going to get you to a hospital.
I killed him?
As far as I know, yeah.
I did a terrible thing, didn't I, Johnny?
Yeah, pretty terrible.
I'm not sorry. You wanted to stop them, but I couldn't let you.
I wanted to get them all at once for what they did to Mickey.
Don't talk now.
Getting just Roy wouldn't have been enough. Would have been easy, but not enough. They were all in it. It was the only way. The cordage.
Sure, sure.
Mickey wouldn't have liked me doing that, would he? He was so honest. He always had to do everything so legal.
And he wouldn't have liked it, maybe, but he might have been proud of it. I am.
Where are you, Johnny? And you think he would have been? You really do?
Yeah, I do. I really do.
He was the best man that ever lived. Too bad I wasn't. Oh. Anyway, I took care of the bigamy. They can't send me back to Joliet.
And that was it. Thelma Weaver McQueen, as the department knows, was DOA at Emergency Hospital. None of the mob got out alive except Roy Weaver, who lived long enough to sign a confession of Mickey McQueen's murder. I want you to know that I may have lost a good friend, but you have lost a better policeman. I hope to see those early news accounts that called him a suicide corrected. Expense account total, $0, 0 cents. It was truly Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, stars Edmund O'Brien in the title role and is written by Gil Dowd with music composed and conducted by Leith Stevens. Edmund O'Brien can currently be seen starring in the Columbia Pictures production 7-Eleven Ocean Drive. Featured in tonight's cast were Bill Conrad, Virginia Gregg, Ben Wright, Jim Nusser, and Dan O'Herlihy. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, was produced and directed in Hollywood by Jaime Del Valle. Join us next week at this time when, from Hollywood, Edmund O'Brien returns in another adventure of...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.